Thank you, Your Honors. I'm Edwin Alden, and I represent Mr. Glenn Briggs.
You got the court's order?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I did. I certainly did, Your Honor. Trying to organize this, the defendant believes that he should be allowed to, first of all, withdraw his plea, and secondly, that the sentencing in this matter clearly is excessive. Mr. Briggs, as been alluded to, has a long mental health history. In fact, his mental health history began in secondary school. He went to school in Yakima. It's well established, and he has an IQ when he was evaluated of 70. In this matter, and I indicated in our memorandum in this matter, initially he appeared on August 7th and requested and entered a plea of guilty. Shortly thereafter, on the next day, he requested separate counsel. And, of course, the major problem is this is a young man who's got an IQ of 70, who's housed 230 to 250 miles away from his counsel. He meets with his counsel only shortly before entry of the plea, and immediately thereafter requests that, one, that he have substitute counsel, and that he have his plea withdrawn. The facts of this, the court has already discussed in the previous matter to a great extent. I guess the major point would be that Mr. Briggs had no capability of acquiring anywhere near the quantities of drugs that he's was sentenced on. In fact, if you're looking at the pre-sentence report, he did some minor, and he had apparently scraped to do that, and a number of minor sales to the government for 147.9 grams, as the pre-sentence report would characterize it, were actually occurred. Shortly thereafter, the government urged him to come with larger quantities and larger quantities, and he had all kinds of excuses. He couldn't find it. The guy was gone. They says, well, could you? They encouraged him to provide a weapon for them. He never could come up with a weapon. He come up with IQ 70 sort of excuses. Well, my girlfriend put it in the garbage, and it went out with the garbage, and I lost the weapon, so she was, I don't have the weapon now. There never was a weapon that he was able to acquire in this matter.
What about the question that was he asked you to address?
Oh, the question, yes. A review would indicate that in this case, it's quite clear that there was no use, possession, or transfer of a firearm. There was no firearm. And looking at the history of, and I guess the most significant case that I could find on that is the 97 case from this court, United States versus Myers. And in that case, I think that the interesting point is that for purposes of sentencing, the district court must determine, one, under B5, which is now B6, whether Myers used or possessed any firearm or ammunition in connection with another felony offense, or possessed or transferred the firearm or ammunition with knowledge, intent. That's the language of that case, and it clearly anticipates that there's a real weapon.
Mr. Alden, you mentioned on page 1 of your brief, you show that as your issue presented for review number 3, but that's the last time it's mentioned. You make no argument about that point in your brief at all. Is it mentioned again in your brief anywhere? Or for that matter, is it Myers mentioned anywhere in your brief?
No, Myers was the research that I did. In fact, at the when the court asked the question.
But you don't argue this point at all in your brief.
No, I do not. I guess the point I tried to make in the brief is that there was no that this the substantial quantities of cocaine and methamphetamine which Mr. Briggs was sentenced concerning were solely the imagination of the government, that they never existed. In fact, the government agent attempted to encourage Mr. Briggs to come up with those, and when he couldn't, they come up with this scheme of this invasion, home invasion robbery in the Seattle area, and that he was supposed to acquire a gun, which he did not do because he couldn't. He didn't have it. The only thing that Mr. Briggs was able to put together was a Kevlar vest. There was never a weapon, and there was never any significant amount of drugs.
Well, he pled guilty to a conspiracy to use the weapon. So,
which he requested to withdraw that plea.
I understand, but he did plead guilty to it. So if we were to disagree on the withdrawal issue, that would be an established fact. And the question becomes, how does that feed into the entrapment issue?
In that case,
on sentencing,
the government had to know, the government agents had to know, that Mr. Briggs was not capable of acquiring a weapon, didn't acquire a weapon, and did not have the capability of producing or acquiring these types of quantities of drugs.
Well, they were setting up a supposed house robbery where he would get them. He didn't get them, but whether he could get the drugs isn't the issue, because the real question is, could he distribute the drugs, it seems to me.
Mr. Briggs at no time demonstrated the capability of acquiring or distributing large quantities of drugs. In fact, he couldn't acquire a weapon. This appears to me, this comes down to a case of no significant drugs, no weapons, and no capability of acquiring either one. But he was sentenced as if he had the capability, and this idea, the quantities were the idea of the government. The government could just as well have said that they had a tanker in Seattle Harbor from the Medellin cartel that had 4 tons. Would we sentence him to 4 tons? There never were any drugs.
Were you the trial counsel?
No, I was not. I was appointed on the day after he pled.
Okay. After he pled, you mean before sentencing?
No. He pled on August 7th. He requested a change of counsel and to withdraw his plea on August 8th. The lengthy period of time that occurred between August 8th and when he was actually came to court to withdraw his plea and ultimately sentencing the delay was due to getting a psychological evaluation, which had not occurred.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Counsel, I'm James Gakey on behalf of the government. I appreciate the Court providing direction on Monday about an issue it wants to address. I always find that helpful. I'll get to that issue in a second. I'd first like to address the issue of the plea withdrawal. I think I can do that very quickly. Frankly, the defendant showed no fair and just reason to withdraw his plea, and that entire line of argument was completely undermined by his own expert. His own expert, Dr. Mays, makes quite clear that the defendant understood precisely what he was doing, and the chronology here makes quite clear what the defendant was doing. The defendant chose to withdraw his plea, asked for new counsel, waits 6 months, gets the PSR, doesn't like the result in the PSR, tries to game the system and goes, wow, that's a high result. I don't like it. I think I want to withdraw my plea. It's self-evident what has occurred here. And any evidence that he could have presented was in the form of the expert report he asked for from Dr. Mays, and that shot him out of the water. Dr. Mays himself said he knew exactly what was going on. And I frankly think the way he attempted to game the system here demonstrates how clever the defendant is, regardless of what may have been said in the report about his mental acume. He clearly has a good street acume and knows how the system works. And moving on to this issue of briefly on sentencing and entrapment, I think it's very important here. The defendant chose to plead guilty to the drug quantities at issue here in count one of 2063. He pled guilty to a factual basis in a plea agreement that said the objective of that conspiracy for the stash house robbery was to get 10 kilos of powder cocaine or 10 kilos of powder cocaine and 10 pounds of methamphetamine. He pled guilty to those facts. Mm-hmm. That effectively, in my view, eliminates much of the sentencing entrapment argument here. And as for his capability and ability to undertake that event, breaking into a house or with weapons and other individuals and seizing that quantity of drugs, he clearly is capable of doing that.
Well, don't really know that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
There's no record. I mean, the government says, sort of speculates, says there were lots of home invasion robberies, and so they tried this out on him, and he agreed to do it. But you don't have any evidence that he actually did in any of those other home invasion robberies.
No, and that's why this investigative technique was attempted on this individual. And how he responds to it, I think, is important. I'm not sure it's a very good record in Mr. Glenn Briggs' case, but it's a good record in Michael Briggs' case, where the tapes were played at trial. What this defendant did, as soon as that idea was floated, he started gaming ideas on how to do it. Oh, we'll go in and we'll shoot them all. I'll bring a bulletproof vest. I have a crew that can do it. What kind of individuals are at the stash house? So that type of individual is soft. So if this matter, I'm not saying it should, but if this matter were to come back for resentencing, the government certainly should have an opportunity to develop a record, which clearly exists in terms of Glenn Briggs' motive and capabilities here.
At the Glenn Briggs sentencing, did the issue of the quantity come up? You know, was that argued by, you know, defense counsel? Do you remember?
I wasn't counsel of record at trial counsel for this. I don't know if it came up specifically. Yes, it did. It did come up in sentencing. The sentencing transcript makes clear that argument generally was raised at sentencing. It effectively an entrapment argument.
What's
the government created this amount.
All right. What's the what's the reason that Glenn Briggs, who seems to be the smaller fry, get such a greater sentence than his brother?
The government would respectively disagree that Glenn Briggs is the principal in this operation. He pled out to 8 counts across 4 indictments. He had a history of drug trafficking, and he had a history of drug trafficking with undercover officers. For instance, he brings what is undisputed, that he brings a bulletproof vest to this event.
For his brother.
The other way around.
Michael brought it for Glenn. I would submit to the court that it's much harder to get a bulletproof ballistic vest than it is to get a gun. The fact that this defendant can acquire on the street a bulletproof vest is significant here.
But let's go back to the drug amounts. Okay. And then we really do want you to get to the firearms issue. But as I said before, the charge was not the home invasion, although that was the underlying facts. The charge was conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute, right? Do you think there is any requirement to sustain that, that there be some ability to distribute, that there be some likelihood that this guy could actually distribute it?
I think that the record is clear that he had the ability to distribute it because he pled guilty to multiple other actual distributions.
Yes, but teeny ones.
They were teeny ones, but it doesn't mean that he didn't have the mens rea and the distribution channel to do it. He's not somebody who's never dealt drugs and doesn't know how to who to sell it to, how to move it on the street. He's somebody who's
He was talking, I don't know the amounts, but teeny amounts when he was selling it to the government and doesn't seem to be able to, he didn't seem to have distribution channels for large, he wasn't a trafficker, in other words. So there was no evidence that he was a middle person as opposed to a street seller.
Well, there's plenty of evidence that he aspired to be.
And it was what?
Plenty of evidence that he aspired to be. He aspired to be as big as he possibly could.
He might have aspired to be, but he had to know how to sell big chunks too, and there's no evidence he did.
I think anyone in that milieu would know how to move that kind of quantity.
Okay. Can you come down to the firearm? Because there the sentencing guideline talks about used or possessed, not hypothetical, not intended to, but actually did. So how does that... how does the government get around that?
Well, first I'd argue in the facts of this case, the fact that the defendant pled guilty, frankly, to conspiracy to possess a firearm in conjunction with a drug.
But the language says if the defendant used or possessed. That's in the, at least in the plain language, would seem to say actually did it.
It is. It's the plain language of 2K2.1b6. In my research on 2K2.1b6, all the cases I could find, there was an actual gun involved or there was a gun involved by a co-conspirator.
Let me ask you a predecessor question. It says in connection with another felony offense. What does that mean? What's the other felony offense?
Well, the 2K2.1 guideline relates to possession of a gun in relation to some other felony offense, such as that drug trafficking crime in this instance. But I think it's an important point here. 2K2.1, when it was applied in the PSR, effectively washed out. What was really applied in the PSR was 2D1.C2. And that was what we're talking about here is a two-point enhancement. It was a two-point enhancement to the larger drug quantity amount. And under 2D1.1C2, it's very similar to 2K2.1. It requires the clear language says possession of a firearm in conjunction with a drug trafficking offense. But if you look at the application note 12, it relates back to a 1B1.3, which effectively says, at least in my view, 1B1.3A1B, that application note 12 to 2D1 relates back to 1B1.3. That allows for constructive possession in a joint enterprise. And I think we have, on the unique facts of this case are very important here. The evidence of constructive possession here is the fact that he, one, was able to come up with a bulletproof vest. Yep. And what they were talking about in this instance was the guns were going to be acquired at the next stop along the way, but the operation was taken down for officer safety reasons before that.
Well, I don't see how the government can have it both ways. I mean, it gets them, sets them up, and puts the guns on the table, in effect, as part of the deal, but cuts off the sting before they get down the road. There's no evidence that they had the capability other than the bulletproof vest, but even with that, there's no actual, they never get to the point where they've actually done it. So all we have is a statement that they must have used it or possessed it or transferred it. Under any reading of it, that would say, that talks in actuality. And now you're saying, well, because they were pled or convicted of a scheme to do it, it seems a little bit of a stretch.
It's a little bit attenuated, but I think it's permissible under 1B1.3A1B. But I would say if this case were to come back on that limited issue, that while it's not well-developed in Glenn Briggs' record, it's alluded to that Mr. Mora, the government should have an opportunity, I would submit, to develop that issue, because I believe that it's alluded to that Mr. Mora has said, in fact, that the guns were at that next stop and we were going to go get them. But I will concede it's not
well developed. One thing that's a little strange, I mean, the sort of gaping hole here, and I kept thinking about it when I was reading the records, how come the government didn't go to that place to find the guns?
The record's silent on that.
I mean, if there were guns sitting there, you'd think the government would want them and want them off the street.
I would posit that's a good question, but I would submit the record's silent on that point.
According to NPR this morning, they're taking them into Starbucks and wearing them on their hips. So. All right, thank you.
My last point would be it's important to look at what the defendant pled to factually.
Okay, thank you. Counsel, do you have anything to add?
Your Honor, the only thing I would add is that the truth of the matter is the only Mr. Briggs pled to this offense, but there were never any weapons. There was lots of talk about weapons. There was lots of talk about drugs.
All talk and no cattle.
Huh? And there was, and counsel has indicated that, well, this is a conspiracy, so therefore somebody had a gun. There was never a gun produced. And it was requested on numerous occasions, and no gun was ever produced, and no significant quantities of drugs were produced.
Okay, thank you. Counsel, thank you both, and the case is submitted. And we will be in recess for the day.
Terrific.